You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Each week, the CEO Series takes you inside the minds and lives of some of Canada's and indeed the world's top leaders to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. Some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us. People like Justin Trudeau, Muhammad Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Joanne Liu, former international president of Doctors Without Borders. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice of the kind of thoughtful leaders at the helm of today's most successful organizations. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Raefer Wallace, founder and CEO of Giga, a company that focuses on the development of building standards to make the built environment healthier and greener. Raefer, thank you for joining us today.
Professor Moore, thank you for having me.
Can you tell us about your early years? Where did you grow up? What was your family up to?
Yes, I grew up in the Eastern Townships in Quebec. My mother is from Quebec, but my father's from New Zealand. So grew up amongst a family of five, was the middle child, growing up by a lake out in the woods. Both parents, doctors, both health professionals, mother, self-taught architect, and both parents being very much involved in real estate as well.
So what did you want to do growing up as a kid? What was your dream to be back in elementary or high school sort of thing?
Oh, God, for as long as I remember, I can remember it's been about being an architect. My mom, as mentioned, was a self-taught architect and grew up around fixing up and dreaming up buildings and drawing them up. So that is the longest standing wish.
Raefer, I have a hunch as to what your answer will be, but what did you study at university?
Evidently, I ended up studying architecture as part of the engineering department. So I got my master's in architecture, graduating in 2000.
Clearly, you're a leader today in terms of not only the company, but also thought and improving and making the world a different place. When did you first see yourself as a leader? Was it back in high school or was it later on in life?
It's an interesting question. I mean, I think maybe define leadership a little bit different than others. It's been more about trying to fulfill a vision. And a lot of that vision has just been about wanting to leave the world in a better place than when I found it or when I stepped into it. And so it's really just been identifying the gaps and the problems in the industry and trying to fix the biggest ones. So, you know, I'm not sure the primary identification is as a leader, but more as a fixer of problems. And turns out that many of these problems are big problems that others are trying to fix too.
Well, I think that's leadership for sure, but that's a debate for another time. We'd probably need a few hours ahead of us to really get into it.
It's not a bad idea.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I've been speaking with Raefer Wallace, founder and CEO of Giga. So thinking of my undergrads, what advice would you have for my undergraduate students to get more out of their degree? Looking back, it's a few years now. What advice would you have for my undergrads?
If they haven't traveled, if they're not from overseas, they definitely need to get out of the country. That is one of the, I think that should be a prerequisite. They need to have as much exposure as possible. And I think look beyond their profession. I've noticed this culturally in a lot of departments. It's very common for people in law to study law and not become lawyers. It's very common for people to study engineering and not become engineers. But there are certain professions like architecture where you're expected to become an architect if you study and graduate from architecture. And that's a bit of a shame because it's such a good training, general training that I often encourage students to look beyond the direct application of their training into other spaces that they could carry those skills into.
What was your first job out of university?
It was flying out to China and working for an architecture firm in Shanghai.
That seems a bit random. You're sitting there, you're from the townships, you're in Montreal, you graduate, and you move to Shanghai back almost 20 years ago. Tell us about how that happened.
As mentioned, my father's from New Zealand, my mother from Quebec. They met in the US. And so the idea, we grew up with always a bit of a global picture. And my parents did a good job of kicking us out of the house all one by one in our teens to go and study abroad. So I studied in Europe for a year in my teens. And I was lucky enough to have scholarships that took me on various travels through Egypt and places like this. And noticing how much more experienced the rest of the world was in the things that I was interested in this particular case, you know, looking at Germany at the time, how much more advanced they were in architecture. And growing up in Quebec, which quite honestly was pretty slow in the late 90s, and going to China was a bit of an allergic reaction to that. Was what's the busiest place on earth? China. Thank you very much. One-way ticket. I'm out of here. I want to be where the action is. So it wasn't so random. It was just a direct desire to be where the action was.
You're listening to the CO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I've been speaking with Rafer Wallace, founder and CEO of GIGA. So Rafer, what is GIGA and what do you guys do?
GIGA is a mission-driven company where we develop tech-based building standards and cloud software. Now, that's a bit heady, but our focus is on health and sustainability in real estate, or to use the current buzzword, ESG metrics for real estate.
That sounds very up-to-date. We're doing a session in my advanced strategy class about ESG and how to bring it to the world. It's a very hot topic among young people, particularly a great interest in that. What led you to focus on that? Tell us about, because it's a great purpose. Another one of our sessions is about purpose in organizations. How did you get to that purpose?
I mean, if I go way back, I look at our education and I grew up in rural Quebec during a time when the zeitgeist was about leaving the environment in a better condition than when you found it, especially we were very, very outdoorsy. And so the challenge became, you know, if I want to leave the world in a better place than I found it, where's the area that I can have the largest impact doing something I think I'm good at? And that was architecture. And so chose the profession specifically with the desire to create a positive impact. Then entering into the profession, especially in China, sort of starting out my career in China, was building like crazy and with no concept of sustainability at the time, just realized the scale, utter scale and magnitude of the problem and how far we were from creating a positive impact with the buildings that we were designing. So that was really the start of it. And sort of heavy landing, hard landing in China, and starting to chisel away at the problem piece by piece. But it was a very sort of mission-driven entry into the profession from the get-go.
Is China doing better today than it was when you started out almost 20 years ago?
Infinitely. I mean, when I got here, I often tell the story, it took me 6 months to translate the word formaldehyde into Chinese. I was trying to figure out how to ask for it to make sure it wasn't in products and nobody knew what I was talking about. Today, I'd say China is one of the world leaders by far. Now people are looking to China in terms of what's being done here that can be exported abroad. So it's come an incredibly long way in the 20 years that I've been here.
You're listening to the CO Series, and today we're hearing from Rafer Wallace, founder and CEO of GIGA. This just reveals my ignorance more than anything, but I'm genuinely surprised that China has come to that point. What led China to be one of the leaders in this ESG part of architecture?
Well, I mean, there's still a ways to go, but obviously, if I just take the recent pandemic as an example, and I look at the work we've been doing in air quality here, China obviously has a leg up because a lot of the building stock is newer, and so has been able to put in newer systems over the years and deal with issues that the rest of the world is only becoming familiar with. Of course, air quality being at the top of that. And as we get pulled into North America and Europe to help solve some of these issues, just realized how old and medieval the building stock is in North America. So there's been a bit of a leapfrogging effect there.
It's maybe a Canadian, I lived in Europe for a while, view of the world that China's this backward place where that's really an old school view. So where is China today in terms of, is it one of the leading economies in your mind, without a doubt?
It has been the leading economy since 2008 or 2012, depending on whose numbers you look at. But it's a question I often get asked, when do you think China is going to overtake the rest of the world? And the answer is, well, it already has.
What can China teach Canada, or what can Canada learn from China? Are there a couple of key takeaways that you go, how can you be more like China?
Somebody who's become, I'd like to think, a friend recently would do a better job of answering that than I have. If you haven't read John Stackhouse's book on Planet Canada, that is a book to read. But China does a great job of staying networked and bringing knowledge back into the country, which Canada does an extraordinarily poor job of. We are very insular as a country, and do a very, very poor job of pulling back knowledge from our expats that are overseas and directly tapped into all the advances that other countries are making in other fields.
We're speaking with Rafer Wallace, founder and CEO of Giga. The idea of a healthy building may seem quite esoteric to most of us. Coming up, we'll discuss what it means to make buildings healthier and how Giga does this. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
Top-notch insight from proven leaders. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Rafer Wallace, CEO of Giga.
So it's cloud, it's standards in the cloud. What does that mean in common day English?
So in common day English, I mean, typically building standards are pretty backwards. It's old school. It's a design standard. So you kind of follow a manual and you build a building according to the manual and you cross your fingers and hope that it works. Most of the time it doesn't. And so what this means is now we have the ability to place sensors in buildings and track the actual performance of buildings based on those sensor readings. So it's commercial IoT where we track air quality, energy, water quality, and even waste in real time. So really think of it as kind of a Fitbit doctor for your building.
So it would be for existing building stock as well as new buildings you're going to build.
Exactly.
How much can you improve a building's performance, if that's the way to put it, of a building, let's say in downtown Montreal? How much have you seen kind of the improvements that can take place?
Oh, enormous. Actually, the old building stocks are my personal favorite. That's what I did most of as an architect. So I have a little bit of a bias there, but it's also the greatest room for improvement. So we have, you know, we've had the pleasure of working on buildings that are 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 years old that now outperform new buildings. So the room for improvement is massive. It requires a little bit of know-how, but it's rare that the limitations due to the age of the building are significant.
So you have these sensor devices. They would see the air quality, the energy use, and so on. They would send that report, and then people go take action. What are some of the actions they might take and to make a building better?
Great question. So let's make that one really, really current. So one of the things that we've developed, I mean, over the past few years, we've been blending scientific research with sensor data to really try to understand the impact of these buildings on our health. Over the past year, that's accelerated, obviously, with COVID, where we look at things like what is the impact of humidity on the human immune system versus what is the impact of humidity on the survival rate of viruses. Same thing for temperature. And also, what's the impact of suspended particles, be they solid or liquid, in the air on human health? So we have all this scientific research for this information. When we start mapping it with the sensor data, then we can do real-time assessment of what is the risk of viral transmission through the air in this building right now due to temperature, humidity, particulate matter exposure. And so based on that, based on those results and the metrics, we can adjust the building just to make it safer and healthier.
So COVID-19 has really given this a huge push in terms of the world's concern about it, I take it.
Massively so. Awareness has gone from zero to 100 in just a few months. That's had obviously flip side where, you know, I often say that working in China, this is our COVID has been our fifth health crisis. So this is not the first. You kind of get the hang of it after two or three of these. But what we're seeing in the West is people trying to cram essentially 17 years of experience in 6 months. So there's been a very, very steep learning curve for the West.
You're listening to the CO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I've been speaking with Rafer Wallace, founder and CEO of Giga. My wife teaches grade one, so I've seen through her some of the direct effects of school closures on younger children and their education. Is there a way to make schools and classrooms safer from the viewpoint of COVID-19?
100%, yes. I'm glad you bring that up because schools are close to heart. We talk a lot about work from home and how people are shifting to that, but school for something like grade one from home just doesn't work. Kids need to be in classrooms. So fixing schools is a national emergency far above getting people back into offices. We've been working on this for the past 15 years on how to improve those schools. And the answer is yes, when you're working with the data on how to make the schools just safer and more productive for the kids as well. So that comes from just scrubbing out the air with proper filtration at the right time, at the right place, and properly managing temperature and humidity. It's ultimately not rocket science when you have the data.
How do governments and other decision-making bodies create policy and take action to put safety first?
Remove the subjectivity, remove people's opinions, start with the data. It's what no one ever does. So we're starting to see articles and people sending kids to school with CO2 monitors. That's brilliant. That's great. That's a perfect start, but it's not enough. Those monitors should be tracking CO2, temperature, humidity, and particulate matter. Those monitors are cheap. They're readily available. And then you remove the arguments and the subjectivity. You've got the data to respond to. So starting with the data is absolutely number one. Otherwise, it's just somebody's opinion against somebody else's opinion. And then responding to that data.
What makes a building healthy?
Ooh, that's a tough question. How much time do we have? The word healthy today is being more broadly understood, which is great. It's come a long way from when I started. So we're looking at things more holistically from a climate health perspective. So, of course, climate change, a social health perspective, you know, fostering social equity, human health perspective, meaning it's non-toxic and the air quality is good, case in point with our earlier conversation. And then, of course, environmental health, that we aren't damaging the ecosystems that sustain us. So a healthy building ultimately should be addressing all of those basic fundamentals.
You're listening to the CO Series, and today we're hearing from Rafer Wallace, founder and CEO of Giga.
How much can healthier buildings help towards making progress on climate change? How important is it as an issue?
It should be our number one priority, simply because the conservative estimate right now is that real estate is responsible for a whopping 49% of emissions globally. In China, that's closer to 50 to 65%, depending on what gets factored in and what doesn't. But some of the numbers that I mentioned here don't even include the impact of equipment and furniture and things like this. So one industry that represents over 50% of global emissions, if we're not massively focused on that particular industry, we're looking at the wrong place.
But it's not just new buildings. You're saying it's the existing stock, which is the vast majority of buildings, obviously. What's all buildings at this point are where we can make enormous progress.
Correct. And a huge piece of that. So if I look at that 49% of emissions from real estate, there's 28% of that is, again, conservatively, for building materials alone. So making the right choice of low carbon, carbon neutral building materials, absolutely critical, over one quarter of global emissions. And then the other roughly 25% is from operational energy. There, Canada does a little bit better, seeing as we're heavy on hydro and now becoming world experts in wind as well, which places an emphasis for Canada particularly to be taking a much, much closer look at the building material problem.
Rafer, let's make it personal. We have a home that we need to heat in the winters, that we need to air condition in the summer. What can the average homeowner in Canada do to improve their climate impact?
A lot of it's simple retrofits with smart meters. A lot of homes are still being heated when we're not there or being overheated in the evenings. So smart thermostats are inexpensive and generally becoming easy to retrofit. So that's a really, really good low-hanging fruit that's available in terms of reducing energy consumption within the home. And then just looking at general improvements, you know, a lot of the energy loss in a building is not so much about the insulation. Insulation is, of course, incredibly important, but just from leaky buildings. And so tightening up the building envelope, so windows, you know, caulking the windows in winter, looking for leaks is another huge, huge energy saver.
We're speaking with Rafer Wallace, founder and CEO of Giga. Up next, we'll be talking about Rafer's approach to leadership as a leader of a business and of a sustainability movement. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
Exclusive access to some of the most successful leaders out there. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Rafer Wallace, CEO of Giga. What is the future of healthy buildings? Is it incredibly high-tech field? What kind of developments lie ahead for us?
We ultimately need to see, it's a question of time, but we ultimately need to see buildings as tools for regenerating our damaged environments. So we normally look at buildings as how do I do less bad? I'm going to build a building here, and how do I minimize my destruction on the environment? Well, we've reached a stage where we've got so much destruction done that now it's time to flip the concept and say, okay, how do I take a building and make it a constructive impact? How do I build a building that produces water, wastewater that's cleaner than the water that's coming in? So the more I operate the building, the better it is for the environment. How do I build on a site that's been destroyed and use the building to restore ecology so that I have more plant space, more green space by the time I'm done with the building than when I started? How do I use the building to create place? There's all the cities historically that have failed in the world. One of the common ingredients is separation between rich and poor. So how do I use the buildings to stitch rich and poor back together again to encourage social cohesion? Those are all big topics. They're all critical elements of health. There's a lot of smart people working on this right now. And generally, COVID-19 has been a blessing. Been the best thing that could have happened to the world in terms of slap in the face, wake up call for having to address these issues and accelerate them. And so although these issues might have sounded extremely heady a few years ago, now there's an incredible amount of momentum behind all of the ones that I've mentioned.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I've been speaking with Rafer Wallace, founder and CEO of Giga.
One of the key trends we see is working from home because of COVID-19, but I've talked to about 60 CEOs since the start of the pandemic. And to a person, they're looking at, I can't say you got to be at work 5 days a week, given that we've not for a year. So how is this going to change those giant downtown buildings that we see in Montreal, Shanghai, Toronto, around the world? Do you see as an architect that we're going to move away from those very large mega cities?
No, we're not. There's a lot of garbage that's been written over the past year, and I'm a huge fan of history. And when you look historically, you realize that people have very short-term views. It's very hard for people to see more than tomorrow. We're just seeing a swing in the pendulum right now. What we will see 100% is people breaking down their headquarters. So instead of having whatever, 8 floors of a headquarters, they're going to have 1 floor in that building. And the rest of the space is going to be distributed across a number of little offices in the region. So hub and spoke model. But that means there'll be those other 7 floors that they're giving up are going to be occupied by other similar space breakups, right? So we're just going to see when the pendulum swings back, we're going to see just more exploded hub and spoke model occupying the real estate. So smaller tenants and a larger number of those tenants within the buildings. But when we look at just basic real estate dynamics, you know, those tall buildings are not going away. We're actually going to be seeing more of them in the future, just slightly different use case.
I had this vision of the downtown high-rises of Canadian cities being abandoned, but you're saying, don't worry about it, they'll survive.
In the short term, those buildings are going to struggle because they were not prepared. And the real estate generally in North America has been asleep at the wheel. I hate to say it, but it's kind of hard to feel sorry for the real estate industry. They should have seen it coming more than anybody else. So struggle in the short term, but I wouldn't worry in the long term. Those buildings will be reoccupied, no question about it.
How many employees does Giga have and where are they located?
We are a surprisingly small organization. We've got about 20 employees, and we're pretty evenly split between Quebec City, to be specific, and Shanghai. A few in the U.S. as well, but our main is Quebec and Shanghai.
Why Quebec City?
Follow the talent. We found one of the world's best software developers. That's where our CTO is. And this was a classic story of me looking around the world, Eastern Europe, Singapore, just looking for the CTO I needed. And surprisingly enough, I found him in Quebec City. So that's where we set up the headquarters for that.
You're listening to the CEO Series, and today we're hearing from Raefer Wallace, founder and CEO of Giga. One of the things we look for in our leaders today is for them to be authentic. What does that mean to you, Raefer? Is that a term that makes sense to you?
It does, but I think it's always a question that's best asked from somebody else. Leadership is a strange term in the West. It's something that is sought after. It's objectified. To me, leadership is a result of just doing what you need to do. And so there's never been a desire on my part to be a leader. There's a desire to fulfill a vision. And then if others want to join for that, then it's called leadership. If no one wants to join, then it's just called a solo trek.
And you wonder if you're wrong, if no one wants to follow you in a sense. Or maybe you're just way ahead of the curve.
Who is a leader that you look up to? Who or what is a good leader to your mind?
Yeah, that's a tough question. And kind of pull a blank there, because generally, to me, there's a global lack of leadership today. We really need to redefine that. There really are no standouts. That being said, you know, in thinking through this, I do think that most of the best leaders today and those that come closest to what leaders should be are women. You know, Jacinda Ardern comes to mind, maybe partially biased because I'm half New Zealander, but the redefinition of leadership needs to happen. I think it is in the process of happening. And over the next couple decades, will change significantly from hard leadership to soft leadership. And I think that's probably going to be more women-led than anything. So if I were to look anywhere today towards leadership, it'd be more towards our women leaders.
So are you an introvert or extrovert?
I am 100% an introvert.
But you manage to lead and inspire in your better moments. I mean, do you act more like an extrovert at times?
Being an introvert, you study this question of what it actually means to be an introvert. And I've realized that an introvert is not somebody who doesn't necessarily talk or communicate much. It's somebody who prioritizes sort of quality interactions, who wants depth on those interactions. And so that can come through in terms of, I'm very comfortable on a stage, for example. I give a lot of presentations, which would seem counterintuitive to an introvert. But when that translates into giving a presentation on something that's meaningful and that you believe about and that you can go into depth into, that is 100% in the wheelhouse of an introvert. So the introvert can often appear as an extrovert, I guess, is what I'm trying to say there. It's really about the type of content that gets covered.
Prior to the pandemic, were you kind of back and forth between Shanghai and Quebec quite a bit?
Shanghai, Quebec, yes, but also India and Europe. So a lot of traveling prior to the pandemic.
What do you miss about traveling?
Nothing. I really don't. I grew up traveling. I love to hike. I love to be outdoors. But traveling for business is a bit of a grind. And I love the fact that COVID-19 has pulled people online. I was traveling. I had to go to Hainan, which is a tropical island in the south of China. And I was just thinking how inefficient this was. It was essentially 24 hours of travel time for one meeting. I think, wow, today I can pack in 12 meetings in that same amount of time. So of course, I'm joking. I'm missing a lot of the direct relationships with the people we work with, but generally the travel itself, I really am not missing.
You had me until you mentioned tropical island. Then as someone in Canada, you go, I'm not sure there's the worst of things, but you know.
We're speaking with Raefer Wallace, founder and CEO of Giga. Coming up, we'll talk about his work-life integration. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
They made it, and they're telling you how. You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Raefer Wallace, CEO of Giga. We've undergone a series of lockdowns and curfews across the different provinces in Canada, but China was hit first by the pandemic. Paint us a picture of that early pandemic and what it felt like.
Sitting in the office empty and then going home, streets completely deserted and being in full lockdown and thinking just, people going through, suffering through that grind the first time, not being able to go out and meet anyone, really, really the first moments of lockdown and speaking to friends overseas and thinking, wow, the world has no idea what we're going through. This has absolutely no idea. The world has never lived this before, not knowing that a few weeks later, China would be back to normal and it would be the rest of the world that would be in lockdown. It was a very, very surreal moment.
I take students to Asia most years. We spend 12 days. We're in Tokyo, Bangkok, and Hong Kong. A year and a half ago, I've been to Hong Kong a few times over the years, Manila, and so on. You see more people wearing masks, and you have for years and years. Do you see some of that occurring in Shanghai where people wear masks as they just do?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Obviously, China was better equipped for this. As mentioned, it's not the first health crisis. There's a culture of wearing masks and also generally better building stock, better mechanical systems, as mentioned earlier, but also a much greater understanding of the common good. Which has really been the differentiator here. You really, in the early days, you really didn't want to make, and still today, you don't want to make the mistake of going out and not having a mask if you're supposed to have one on. It's really hardwired into the culture. As an anecdote, when I came back from the US and Canada and was quarantined for 2 weeks, home quarantined, magnet on my door, linked to the police station, to make sure that I wouldn't come out, so effectively turning my home into a prison. And that sounds horrible, but it was actually wonderful because I had the community support. I had a doctor on call 24/7. I had the local community manager calling me every other day saying, Rafer, are you okay? Do you need anything? Hang in there. Thank you for doing your part for our country. You know, getting all this incredible moral and social support along the way, just as being a team player. Being a team player is incredibly important. And actually being thanked for being a team player was just really incredible experience.
You're listening to the CO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I've been speaking with Rafer Wallace, founder and CEO of Giga.
What have you learned about working effectively from home? Or a couple of key takeaways that have struck you over the last year?
Yeah, what I've learned about working from home is that it doesn't work. Work from home, kids, and productivity are three words that really don't go together. So I stay productive by being at the office, even if I'm alone.
How old are your kids?
My kids are 15, 13, and 7.
Are they physically in school or are they schooling from home mainly?
We've been lucky. They've been, again, China's been phenomenal on that front. So they've been, they had a short stint of remote schooling, which was a complete disaster for my 7-year-old. But they've been, since September, they've been back in school normally.
So how do you manage work-life integration with a family as well as a company to look after? How do you balance those things or how do you work them out together?
Ooh, it is tough. I put 300% into the work days. I work 16 to 18 hour days are quite normal. And then the weekends are just complete cut off. The weekends, no work. It's 100% with the kids. Of course, you need a sort of a strong supporting partner. And I have an absolutely incredible wife that helps a lot.
Have you found, I mean, when you talked about your youth, you talked about nature in the townships and you loved it. Have you found nature in the Shanghai area?
Very much lacking. It's a huge gap. That is the single largest negative point about living in Shanghai. It's like living on the moon. You need to get on a plane. You need to get on some kind of vehicle to get out of the city and into nature.
How do you keep in shape?
Wow, that's taken a massive hit during COVID. But normally it would have been swimming and running.
What book are you reading right now?
I'm rereading The Secret Life of Trees. If you haven't read that, I highly recommend it. That, of course, was a follow-up. The past book I was reading, as mentioned at the beginning, was John Stackhouse's new book, Planet Canada, which I absolutely could not more highly recommend for all Canadians. And I do read a lot with my kids. That is my single most favorite activity. So I tend to read what they read so I can keep up with what they're thinking.
This might be a silly question, but China has an incredible number of cuisines. What's your favorite Chinese cuisine?
Oh, that is such an educated question, Professor Moore. Most people are absolutely blown away when they come to China and they spend 2 weeks here. And every day we take them to a different restaurant with a different type of cuisine. And they thought there was only one Chinese food. So that is incredibly hard. I am a big fan of Yunnan food, which is the province that borders Cambodia and Vietnam. That's probably number one on my list. Xinjiang food is absolutely outstanding. Taiwanese food as well. It's a hard pick. There's a lot of good cuisines there.
You're listening to the CO Series, and today we're hearing from Rafer Wallace, founder and CEO of Giga.
Oh, one last question. How do we get you back to Canada, you and your family?
To be honest, we were supposed to move back to Canada this summer and COVID threw a wrench into things. I'll eventually be sending my kids to Canada for college, university, cégep, so they have part of their education there. But the world has been phenomenally changing is an understatement over the past 6 months. And Asia is definitely the center of the world right now and moving forward. So it's become a tough question. We have the company there. We have an amazing team, but global dynamics are changing rapidly, much more rapidly than we would have thought. So up for grabs. We'll see.
It was a pleasure to connect with a Quebecer and McGill grad in China when I talked to Rafer. not only to talk architecture and the environment, but also China from inside. Each year, 30 McGill undergrads, 10 or so alumni, and I travel to a new part of the world to better understand globalization and working in different cultures firsthand. Since our trip to India a decade ago, China has been a central part of the conversation. In India, Russia, South Africa, and on our Chile, Colombia trips, absolutely. But even more profoundly, when we took trips to Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, and the year before the pandemic, Tokyo, Bangkok, and Hong Kong. Around the world, but particularly in Asia, China's continued to grow in importance and influence. I've been traveling to China and Hong Kong for over 30 years. Of course, today Hong Kong is part of China, but I remember being in Bangkok the night that Hong Kong was turned over to China. It was a dramatic event for everybody watching. I had a chance also to visit both Beijing and Shanghai. As a kid growing up in Toronto, I remember China when it was behind the bamboo curtain, a riff on the Iron Curtain, seemingly tending to its own things and mainly countries on its own borders, but ignoring most of the world. Today, we live in a very different world indeed. Again, back in my youth, the world was largely the realm of two superpowers, with Washington and Moscow as the key players. With President Biden's recent meeting in Geneva with President Putin, it has highlighted how Moscow is still an important player on the world scene, yet it's more of a Washington-Beijing world today. Some years ago when I was teaching at Oxford, historian co-author and I wrote three books about business and management in the Assyrian, Phoenician, Greek, and Roman empires. We argued that there was no one-world globalization in the Roman Empire. Each book included a chapter on China in the ancient and medieval worlds. The book which we are finishing off, or approaching finishing off anyway, is about China throughout the ancient, medieval, and modern worlds. What has transpired over the 20 plus years since we wrote the last book in the trilogy is the growth of China to the second economy in the world and perhaps the first economy in the not too distant future, and the flexing of China's influence around the world, particularly in Asia and Africa, but increasingly Europe and indeed our own country. A few times I've had the Globe and Mail's bureau chief in Beijing come to class by Zoom, Nathan Vanderclip. He's moving back to Canada. I hope to have him join us on the show sometime. He's not a CEO, and this is the CEO series. I get that, but I believe China's so important to our future, he is someone we should make an exception for. This is the CEO series. Rafer, thank you for joining us today. We'd also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campagna. Thank you for tuning into the CEO series. Catch the show again next week for a talk with Mark Shapiro, CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays.